Blog Talk Radio.
So this ain't his record. He stole it from somebody else.
Taking it from the top.
Top.
Hell yeah, Chippy. It from the top. It's all more people.
Singing daddy.
Yeah.
Singing
daddy. Hey.
All right.
I kiss the sky. Sing a song of sixpence, a pocket full of rye. Who the fuck wanna die for they culture? Stalk the dead body like a vulture. Decalion, blacker than your blackest stallion. Hit your housing projects
up, y'all?
To represent your challenge.
Good
nigga,
Sunday evening, y'all. I know that we're just the conclusion on an exciting NFL wild card weekend. Too bad the team will be talking about it, they didn't participate. But at any rate, this is Scott Burks coming at you with the Clown Minute. I'm the creator of the Clown Town Sports blog, and that's Clown spelled with a K, by the way. You can find me on the web at www.theclowntimes.net. And I'm also on Facebook as well. We have a Facebook fan page. Just do a search on Facebook for the Clown Times. Once again, that's Clown spelled with a K. You'll be able to find me. So, as I said earlier, the team we'll be talking about tonight, you know, is the Washington Redskins. I guess we all know about, and this is a little bit late after that, but at any rate, you know, we all know that Mike Shanahan was fired unceremoniously by Dan Snyder and the Redskins, and so many questions, so many people at fault. I wrote a rant about it on my sports blog, even chiming in over a bit on my Facebook page. But we're going to talk to a big Redskins fan who also, you've heard of before, he is the creator of the Yard/HBCU Sports. So he has a lot of on the vine about the Skins, as one could imagine. So before, without further ado, here's my man, Dwayne Nash. Dwayne, sorry about your Redskins, but nonetheless, welcome to the Clown Hour.
You know what, Scott? For the past 10 or 15 years, I'm kind of used to it now. It's just...
Oh, my God.
I really don't know what to say about it, but this has to be probably the worst that I can remember in recent memory, if not all time.
My God.
I don't know what to say.
Dude, I mean, it's one thing, I mean, because God bless Redskins fans. Y'all are one of the most loyal fan bases. I mean, you're very knowledgeable. You know, Redskins Nation is large. I mean, we spread down the north, now south and up north, wherever. But the thing is for the life of me, and especially since Dan Snyder took over the reins as owner, I mean, to me, there's no coincidence that this team has gone south through much of his ownership. But you're a Redskins fan, so I guess this could be a little Dr. Phil session. So, first of all, but basically, who was at fault? I mean, Mike Shanahan, the Mike Shanahan era is over, and there's a lot of people to blame, a lot of blame to go around, but you go ahead, man. Who's to blame and why?
You know what? I've been listening to a lot of people talk, and I've even had my own thoughts, of course, but if we want to look at it, I say that there are three culprits here, and if they were to be on trial, I would say it would have to be Mike Shanahan, Daniel Snyder, and Robert Griffin III. But if we had to rank them,
I agree. Right.
In my opinion, the bottom of the three would actually be, go figure, in my opinion, Daniel Snyder.
Uh-oh.
And let me explain why.
Okay.
If you look at his history over the past, 13 years since he's really owned the team.
Yeah.
They've gone through how many head coaches there? About eight? Was one,
a
two,
thousand.
Three,
yeah.
Four, five, six, seven, eight. Yeah, eight, nine head coaches, right?
Right.
Of those coaches, you know, three of them have two, three, Gibbs, Shanahan have stayed there longer than 3 years. Right?
Yeah, he stayed there four.
Yeah, he was there four. Gibbs was there four.
Okay, right.
So you start looking at that situation in terms of rotating coaches going on here within a 13-year span, which is kind of ridiculous. But, you know, that's what happens when you don't succeed. Out of all of those coaches that he's actually brought in, with the exception of Gibbs, because he's a fanboy of Gibbs, you know, he grew up a Skins fan, and that whole worshiping of Gibbs was there, so he kind of stayed out of Gibbs' way. But I think he had that same type of infatuation with Mike Shanahan when he first brought him in, and he basically gave Mike Shanahan the reins to the team, if you look at it. He basically allowed Shanahan to run the organization, even though Bruce Allen was there, quote-unquote, as general manager. A lot of the moves, in my personal opinion, were made by Mike Shanahan. With the exception of a couple, I still believe probably wasn't all Mike's fault, and I'll get into that a little bit later. But he basically allowed Mike to bring in his own son, which in the beginning I really didn't have an issue with, but we'll talk about that a little bit later as well. you know, it was just a lot of the things that Daniel Snyder has a reputation of doing with the team in terms of football operations, he basically was nowhere to be seen over the past 4 years, with the exception of potentially the Donovan McNabb situation, potentially the trading of the draft picks to move up to the number two spot to get Robert Griffin. There are a lot of buzz statements being made, you know, about Daniel Snyder really being behind those moves. Whether or not it was the case, so be it. It still wasn't his normal Daniel Snyder moves in terms of breaking the bank to bring in over 30 guys to play on this team who basically underachieve and basically robbed this team blind financially.
Yeah.
So if you look at that from a standpoint of what he is known for doing, he really hasn't done over the past 4 years. And I applaud him for that. So he gets... He just believed in Mike Shanahan and allowed him to do what he did. In retrospect, I kind of fault him for that, but not really. You know, he just basically just fell for the hype of him winning two Super Bowls in another organization. Now we talk about the other two culprits here. And I kind of had to spread it evenly between the two of them. Talk about Mike Shanahan, who a lot of his former players that has gotten rid of over the past 4 years. You talk about your Albert Haynesworth, your Donovan McNabb. Let's not forget about Lamont Landry. A lot of the players that he's had beef with during this past season, like Fred Davis and Josh Morgan. You know, he just has the ability to make players sour on him. He had that same reputation toward the end of his tenure in Denver as well. But when you start talking about the health of Robert Griffin III, I'm going to have to lean more on that being Rob's fault, and we'll talk about that a little bit later as well. You know, a lot of people like to have pointed the finger at Mike Shanahan for not pulling this guy during that Seattle game, but I have some pieces of evidence that's rather damning towards Robert Griffin III and his decision-making about him wanting to play not only just in that playoff game, but towards the end of the season as well. But we'll talk about that a little bit later.
All right. So basically, as you see it, you got, like, pretty much Shanahan and RG3 as the co-heads of the blame, if you will, as the two-headed monster. And then Dan Snyder. Well, I'll say this. I do agree with you to a certain extent, on Daniel Snyder. See, in the past, I've derisively called Dan Snyder Danny Boy because, to your point, he was a fanboy of the team. So he, in the past, meddled, with the exception of Joe Gibbs, because he loves Joe Gibbs, but he meddled behind the scenes, he played fantasy football, bringing over the hill Bruce Smith and Deion Sanders many years ago, you know, I think around the time when he hired Steve Spurrier, to coach the team, and also, you know, as far as Joe Gibbs goes, I think that he ran him off. That's just my perception of it. I think that Joe Gibbs had enough of him. I think that, you know, as much good as Joe Gibbs did in those, was he here for 3 years? I forgot when he came.
He was there for four. Yeah, he was there for 4 years.
Okay, so doing those 4 years, I mean, there's only so much you could take. But I have no evidence. That's just my opinion, just looking at it from the outside. And as far as it relates to RG3 and company, present company, you know, with the reports, and I don't know if they're true or not, but, I mean, with the smoke that's fired, reports that, you know, Dan Snyder wanted Shanahan to trade up all those picks to get RG3, to draft RG3, the second pick of the draft, even though Shanahan was in love with Tannehill, and he still managed to get his man in the fourth round with the, I guess, in the third or fourth round with Kirk Cousins. And, you know, with Snyder providing security detail for RG3's wife, allegedly, when she was late to one of his games, and also inviting RG3 and his family over for Thanksgiving to his crib, you know, things that, you know, had me, you know, just flashbacks of Arthur Blank in Atlanta toting around Michael Vick in a wheelchair in the opening game of the season against the Cowboys way back when. I mean, it's stuff that you do not do, in my opinion, as an owner, that will undermine the coaching staff, and also provide all sorts of resentment in the locker room. I mean, you just don't need that. You just don't need that. Now, we'll agree with you on Shanahan and RG3, and part of me is tempted to blame more RG3 because he allowed his brand to do his talking, if you will. Mm. What I mean by that is, you know, he's the endorser man, right? He's Subway boy. He's Adidas boy. He had this whole campaign of Game One bullshit that he shouldn't have been doing. He should have been getting his behind ready behind the scenes and working his way back into football shape instead of, like, you know, putting this full court press for starting Game One, which may have affected Dan Snyder's thinking. I mean, who knows? And, you know, maybe forced Shanahan's hand. But, you know, allowing his daddy to come in and run amok behind the scenes on the team, which he should know better. Now, I mean, he's a military man. He should know better. He should know about protocol, and should have just stayed his behind out of it. But, you know, he loves his daddy. His daddy loves him, but still.
Yeah.
And, you know, and just allowing himself. And I think he was feeling himself. He being RG3, he was feeling himself. You know what I mean? You know, he came on the scene last year with the read option. And, you know, but little did he knows, and this is, and I hope he learned this lesson in humility, is that opposing coaches have a year's worth of film on you. You know, it's like he took the league by, I don't want to say by storm per se, but no one saw the read option and pistol coming. You know what I mean? No one saw that coming. And, you know, I remember the first game against New Orleans where he just lit the Saints up, just lit them up.
I love that game, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he just lit their asses up. I mean, people at the sports bar were like agape. Like their mouths were so agape because they were like, what? You know, because everyone expected the Saints to whoop them. But it was the Redskins doing the whooping because Shanahan rolled out this pistol read option that the league hadn't really seen before. But at any rate, and the point is that, you know, the every defensive coordinator, every opposing coach had all that film on RG3, and that gave them time to study the read option, how to stop the read option, and how to pick apart RG3's weaknesses. And on top of that, word on the street was that RG3 was dictating to Shanahan what type of offense he wanted to be in. He didn't want the read option anymore. He wanted to be sure that he was a traditional drop back passer, which, I mean, God bless him, he has the ability, but he hasn't really shown that. So instead of going with what worked for him, he was feeling himself and just try to be above the team, and that didn't really work for him. In fact, it blew up in his face, and that hopefully they humbled him. Hopefully, being in the last three games of the season humbled him. Hopefully, people talking junk about him on the airwaves and in the media humbled him. I don't know for sure, but the NFL is a very humbling league, as all us fans realize. But that's why I want to. I'm inclined to blame RG3 more because he's the player. But as far as a coach who knows better, I think the lion's share slightly goes to Mike Shanahan. I mean, because he after all, did what he did to Donovan McNabb. He, after all, even though Daniel Snyder stepped in and signed Albert Hainsworth to that ridiculous contract, Hainsworth is a 4-3 defensive lineman.
True.
And Shanahan tried to fit him into a 3-4 shoehorn. Shoehorn him into a 3-4. That had disaster written all over it. And the way Shanahan handled him, I mean, this one thing, sent him out, like making a point, you know, with doing the conditioning drills. But that's one time. Dude, make the point one time. Don't embarrass the man and just create a circus where there didn't need to be a circus. He let his ego run amok, basically. He let his ego just get the best of him. Let his ego get the best of him when, you know, he could have handled the RG3 situation better. He could have handled, let him sit. Yeah, he could have handled it a lot better than what he did, okay? And yeah. I think all those things about RG3's dad being leaked out, I think Shanahan leaked that shit. I really do. Just to make
I'll talk about that in a minute as well. Yeah, because that, in terms of leaking information, I just found it rather interesting that, like I said, I'll talk about that a little bit later on. But sorry to cut you off a little bit, but I got to kind of respond to some of the things that you said in terms of the blame. Okay, yeah, I'm hoping this entire situation, this entire 2013 situation, was a humbling experience for him. The reason why I kind of worry about it potentially not being because the end of 2012 was not. But it kind of finished in a particular way that he still received a lot of praise. And even though he didn't play exceptionally well in those last three games, he played well enough to still garner some sort of attention and have him win Rookie of the Year last year. So, you know, he goes into this offseason, this past offseason, with this whole all-in for week one, Operation Patience, of this nature.
Yeah.
You know, as a fan, I'm kind of like, you know, please shut up, sit back, watch film. But as a guy who understands the business, this league would chew you up and spit you out. The average shelf life for a pro player is, what, 3-4 years? And then you know, placing himself in the harm's way the way that he does because of his style of play, it may or may be shorter. So make the money the best way you can. So I don't fault him for making that change. What I fault him for is not being in that film room and trying to figure out ways to become a better QB. Now, you talk about the option and the pistol. Man, I know you did because I did. And I know a lot of other NFL players, not players, but fans, also watched the San Fran Green Bay game today.
Yes, I did.
Colin Kaepernick ran the rock for 98 yards today. You know what I'm saying? It's not that it doesn't work. I'm thinking it's the parts that make it work. Now, Seattle didn't run it the way they ran it last year, but they still seem to have run it well. The difference between San Francisco, Seattle, and Washington is the fact that Washington's O-line has been an issue. And it hasn't been just an issue just for this year. It's been an issue for the past 4 or 5 years. This is an ongoing situation where the O-line has never been up to, quote-unquote, NFL offensive line caliber. They've been bringing guys off the street. God bless them. You remember Mike Williams, former first-round draft pick for the Buffalo Bills. I remember when they brought him off the street after he had gained too much weight and was kicked out of the league by Buffalo, brought him in to try him out and work him out. They were pulling guys all off the street. They couldn't and weren't drafting the right guys to play O-line in the NFL the way that Mike Shanahan is used to running his offense with these lightweight guys. It just wasn't working with today's NFL where these bigger guys are on the defensive line are also stronger, overrunning these lightweight guys and just killing them and just putting whatever quarterback you want to place back there behind him in some sort of bad situation. And if RG3 wanted to play a pocket passer this past season, that O-line was not the O-line to do it. It just wasn't going to work. It hasn't worked. It didn't work last year. It didn't work the year before. It didn't work the year prior to that when you had quarterback after quarterback after quarterback give up bad performances, be it Rex Grossman, Donovan McNabb, John Beck, whoever you want to put back there. That O-line has done a poor job of protecting that QB with the exception of Trent Williams, who has made it to the Pro Bowl for the past 2 years. But you're talking about this guy and his injury. I do fault him for not wanting to protect himself, but it's kind of a catch-22 if you understand what I'm saying. You know, it's either a situation where you try to protect yourself and you sit out, or you go out there and you play hurt. You know, everyone says there's always a difference between being hurt and being injured. Now, if you're playing hurt, you're seen upon as being a warrior. You know, or if you pull yourself while you're hurt, you end up looking like, quote-unquote, a Derrick Rose or maybe even a Jay Cutler for sitting back in an opportunity, you know, in a situation where you could potentially play. Now, he goes out there, he plays injured, they win.
Yes.
No one talks about him being hurt. He goes out there, he hurts himself while already being hurt. Then it's, oh, my God, why didn't he take care of himself better? Let's look at it from those last 3 weeks in the season last year. They played against Philadelphia. He had a relatively great statistical game, but he didn't light them up. You know, he passed for like 16 of 24 for about a little bit under 200 yards for 2 touchdowns. Not high numbers, but good enough to have a good QB rating. The following week, he passed for like 50% for 100 yards against the Dallas Cowboys. And there was actually footage of him complaining where he said, you know, he can't run or take runs more than 9 yards. But, of course, the coaching staff and the doctors knew nothing of this. But NFL Films caught that audio footage where he said he basically ran for 9 yards and his knee went wah-wah. You know this, but you keep yourself in the game because, and he said it on numerous occasions, he was the best option for the team to win. The Eagles in that bad knee, they beat the Cowboys in that bad knee. What makes you think that he can't beat, or he doesn't think that he can beat the Seahawks on that same bad knee? So he goes out there, puts them on a 13-0 run. Next thing you know, he makes a bad play, twists his knee the wrong way on that horrible turf.
Yep.
And you get the worst. So,
yep.
You know, I just need this guy to make better decisions, but at the same time, you know, you got to know that thin line between being a warrior and being an idiot and ruining your entire career.
Right, exactly. And I think that's when, you know, when I said earlier that he allowed RG3 the brand take over, he realized that now, willingly or not, like allow those sponsors, people who sponsors, people in his ear, people in his circle, inner circle, try to tell him how he should do things, how to create his own brand, and not be smart about himself, you know, not enforce himself into harm's way and everything. But this is slightly, no, well, not really off topic, but when you mentioned about the offensive line player, the Redskins, they do have this guy named Alfred Morris who averaged about 5 yards a pop. Why didn't they, and this may speak to Shanahan's now, to Shanahan's wrongdoing, why didn't they focus more around Alfred Morris when he's getting 5 yards a pop on, like with RG3 on one knee, why didn't they stick with Morris instead of like trying to put the ball in RG3's hands?
That is a excellent question, and that's a question that a lot of fans and a lot of pundits were thinking during that game, because he had like, 16, 18 carries for about 80 yards in that game. Why not give him a rock? You're up 13-0, give him the ball. Let him run the ball. And right. You're right. He is a very capable back. One of the things that I believe in what is a misconception on why Mike Shanahan's record is so bad is because he's had bad players on his team. He starts to get young, good players on the team, and for whatever reason, play calling issues, time management issues in terms of controlling the clock, wasting timeouts, just things that have been issues throughout his entire tenure here. It just baffles my mind why you don't take advantage of the other players that you or of good players that you have on your team, and you end up with the output that you have. You know, one of my favorite things I love for people to throw up in everyone's face is the fact that Mike Shanahan's record here in D.C. while he was here is that he was 24-40 over the past 4 years.
Mm. Right.
Right? Let me break it down to you. 24-40, that's 6-10 every year, right? You,
right.
Take into perspective, who was his quarterbacks during that point in time? Donovan McNabb, a QB who, as a fan, I didn't want to come to D.C. because I remember his last couple of years in Philly. He's throwing screen passes in the dirt. Really?
Mm.
You know, you're all-pro Donovan McNabb, and you're throwing screen passes in the dirt, and plus the team trades you within the division. Something has to be wrong with this guy that they know about that, of course, they won't tell you about. But I digress. Then you bench him for Rex Grossman. Gunslinger, if you will. But, yeah, he likes to turn the ball over a lot.
Yeah, right? Good Rex and bad Rex, yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, you get good Rex, bad Rex. You know, it is what it is. But you also take a look at their running back situation over the past 4 years. Starts out with Clinton Portis, 5 games that year in 2010. Messes up, I think, his knee, ends his career. The following year, they start out with Tim Hightower, you know, free agent pickup from Arizona. He starts well, and they go 3-1 in 2011. He hurts his knee. We haven't heard from him since. You know, they start relying on your Ryan Terrains, your Roy Halluz. They bring in Char Choice. Remember him?
Yes.
Remember Larry Johnson? Remember him?
Oh, geez, you going like the bottom of the barrel of the fantasy leagues.
You know what I'm saying? So you know these are the guys that he has to work with. He even brought in Fats Woody Parker to try out. I know you remember him. So,
yeah.
You know, you start looking at the guys that they bring in at the running back position. If you don't have a quality running back, you know, you can't control the clock. And then, you know, you look at the receivers that he has. You know, Santana Moss is Santana Moss, but, of course, he's aging. But, you know, they also had Jabbar Gaffney. And then you start talking about, exactly, you know, Dante Stallworth.
Yeah.
You know.
They had so much garbage, man.
You know, see, that's the thing. They had so much garbage, and this is coming fresh off of the uncapped year money that these guys that they were bringing in. You know, my guess is that they really couldn't get anybody to come into the franchise to play. Well, that plus they had so much money locked in to a lot of these high-priced guys that were there before Shanahan got there. What are you to do? So, you know, he does his best by getting these high-priced guys out of there. I thank God for Donovan McNabb signing that dumb contract where he had to be on the roster by a certain month in order for him to get his guaranteed money. And, of course, he wasn't going to make it by that date. Duh. They benched the last 3 games of the season. The season prior, you thought you was going to make it to that date? Come on, man. Let's be real. But you know, they get rid of those guys. They start bringing in other older guys on the team and sign them to 1-year deals. You know, let's see if some of these names jog your memory. Medeo Williams, Cedric Griffin, Ryan Grant.
No.
These are all guys who played on. You know, Ryan Grant played with Green Bay. Cedric Griffin played with Minnesota. Medeo Williams out in San Francisco for a little bit. They also brought in O.J. Otagwe, another failed experiment there for a year. They brought in Gerald Tapp from Philly this past season. Nick Barnett from Green Bay. So, you know, they're bringing in a lot of these older guys on one-year deals just to see if it works. If it doesn't work, so be it. You get the guys out of there, and hopefully with the money that they get back, they're able to bring in new guys. But, you know, you just have these guys playing with untalented players on the O-line, having guys on the defense playing out of a scheme that they're not used to playing. You have a coach who didn't even want to coach the 3-4, coaching the 3-4. How does that happen?
Yeah, how does that happen? I was meaning to ask you that because I didn't think that the I forget his name.
Jim Haslett. Jim Haslett, a.k.a. Jim Haslett,
yeah, Haslett.
Whatever you're saying,
I mean,
put a picture of Jim Haslett and Freddy Krueger next to one another. I guarantee you they twins separated at birth. I'm just saying. You get a guy like Jim Haslett. You get a guy like Jim Haslett who has been coaching the 4-3 his entire coaching career to force him to do the 3-4, and he agrees to it. I mean, that just lets me know he just wanted to check. That's just ridiculous right there. Why doesn't he speak up and say, you know what, number one, we don't have the personnel to run them. And you know what, I personally don't like running the 4-3. If he really was animate about running the 3-4, I'm sorry, he should have brought in a guy who is animate about running the 3-4. You don't bring in a guy who has a history of running the 4-3 to run the 3-4. It's ridiculous. Why? So, you just have a bunch of square pegs trying to go into circle holes, you know, and it just doesn't work for 4 years. They got lucky on that one stretch of winning 7 straight last year, and the fans and probably the front office just believe that they finally turned the corner. But I didn't see it because the O-line just wasn't what it was. And then, of course, Shanahan's rapport with his players. And then, of course, all of the quote-unquote leaks toward the end of this past season, which were just ridiculous. I mean, no other organization in the NFL, no other quality organization in the NFL suffers from leaks like this. They don't. And if they do, they're out of the building once they find out who has these leaks.
Mm. That's insane, yo. That's insane. I mean, because you can tell by the look on Haslett's face that he's like, yo, I'm just getting paid.
Yeah, he has to. It's very sickening, man. It's very sickening as a fan. And to listen to the fan base just continuously have to suffer year after year, it's just very disheartening. And to just basically sit there and watch this team implode the way that they did this past season, it's even worse. And to have Mike Shanahan to react the way that he reacted, our local media, when asking them questions that fans want to know, like, Dave Owens for Channel 9 News here in the D.C. area basically asked Mike Shanahan, where are these leaks coming from? And Mike is like, you tell me. I'm like, come on, man. How is that a response? You tell me. When it's kind of evident that if it's not coming from you, it's coming from the coaching staff. When your buddies, come on now, what's the guy's name over at ESPN that used to work with the Denver Post?
Oh, it's about Woody Page. Woody Page.
No, not Woody Page. The other guy, NFL expert. I see his face. I can't remember
about
what his name is.
Yeah, Andrew. No. I know. It's on the tip of my damn tongue. Scheffler.
Yes.
Yeah.
Adam Schefter. Adam Schefter is Mike Shanahan's boy. What's your girl's name that works for the Post? I can't remember what her name is, but I'm not too fond of her either. But she has a close relationship with Mike Shanahan. So all of these leaks are coming out through them. Who else are these leaks coming from then? If it's not coming from the head coach, it's coming from somebody close to him. It's ridiculous.
Right.
And whenever it was a situation where he thought it was wrong or was it a flat-out lie, he would say so. But when asked about him wanting to pack up his things and leave before the playoffs last year, his response is, all I have in my office anyway is an iPad and a couple of notebooks. You're not saying no, so it leads me to believe that, yeah, you wanted to leave. So,
yeah,
it's just so frustrating to see a guy.
Do you think that those leaks came out because, I mean, granted, that was over a year old, that
yes.
the leak came out about that was because he just wanted to get fired and collect his check?
Yes. And that's what I truly hope, in my opinion, that those last 3 weeks of the season were. I hope that it was a situation where, you know, which is kind of selfish, but I understand because of the amount of money he's basically dumped into this organization since he's basically owned it. I'm thinking that Daniel Snyder was trying to figure out a way to fire Mike Shanahan with cause so that he wouldn't have
right.
to pay him that $7 million for the following season. But since he couldn't find cause, he decided to hold on to him, which basically, it couldn't have gotten any worse. It's just the fact that it was drug out, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Right. And more and more foolishness just kept slowly leaking out throughout that time period to on the outside looking in, make it look worse. And in my opinion, it caused the team to lose out on a couple of potential good coaching candidates in like a Lovie Smith or Bill O'Brien or Ken Whisenhunt, who basically Detroit is saying it's his job to lose if he doesn't want
yeah.
the job. So, you know,
right.
it would have been, you know, great for them to get a head start to interview these guys so that, you know, they can get the heads up in beating these other organizations to you know, at least talk to these guys. But I just find it very interesting on a lot of the guys who they're planning on bringing in and a lot of the guys who they have attached to bring in for next year in terms of interviewing over the next couple of weeks. It's rather interesting and in some cases even laughable, but, you know, it is what it is. That's what the NFL
right.
is all about in terms of trying to keep a story alive or try to keep a rumor going to kind of generate interest in another guy.
So, this leads to my question to you. Who in the hell would take this job? Who would take this job working for Dan Snyder, dealing with RG3 and his brand and his crew, dealing with a roster that's old and doesn't have many draft picks to play, you know, thanks to the trade and move to RG3 a couple of years ago. Who would coach the squad? Who out there
that's
is very, willing to take a chance?
That's a very interesting question, and there are a lot of variables that you have to keep in mind when taking this job. First and foremost, we already know about the owner and his reputation.
Yeah.
But I'm starting to believe that he may finally get it. From his past
really?
History, all I can do is go off of present history. You know, I just believe that he finally gets it, that, you know what, I need to go ahead, stay out of the way, and allow my front office to do what it is that they need to do. But the one thing that I do worry about is that they don't technically have a general manager in place as of right now. They need to go ahead and handle that soon, or at least have the guy that they plan to be the GM be a part of this hiring process of bringing in this next head coach, because that's something that this organization has had an issue with ever since Daniel Snyder has taken off purchased the team back in 1999, going way back to Bobby Mitchell when he was the assistant GM to a GM that did not exist, which is completely ridiculous. So they need to go ahead, get a GM in place, allow him and Bruce Allen to go out, interview these coaches, and make a decision on who the next head coach needs to be. I just find it very interesting that, what is his name, A.J. Smith, that used to be with the Chargers. He's in the front office with Washington, but he hasn't been heard of for this entire season at all. So I would like to know what is technically his role in the front office, and what is his role in terms of bringing in the GM and bringing in the head coach?
So basically, A.J. Smith's with the Redskins? I didn't know that.
Yes. Yes, he's been with the Redskins since the end of last year.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what is Allen's role? Is he like a puppet? Is he like
a figurehead?
What is his role?
He's a consultant, quote unquote, from my understanding.
Because I was understanding that Allen was the GM and Shanahan was his boy, and Shanahan ran the whole thing, you know, ran the draft and everything, but it was like he and Bruce Allen, you know. That's what I was thinking the entire time.
And that's what it was for the first 2-3 years up until they got or brought in A.J. Smith. They bring in A.J. Smith to actually be some sort of consultant to Bruce Allen, which I was kind of leery about because of his reputation and what he did in San Diego. He was able to draft these great guys, but he wasn't willing to sign these guys back. Now, I understand that works well in terms of saving money, but it kind of breaks up the continuity of a good team that you have when you're having these young guys play well for you for a couple of years. When if you hold on to them for another year or two, it may finally click and, you know, you win it all. But things that Bruce Allen has been able to do over the past couple of years, and I applaud him on that, is for him to bring in guys on the cheap. I mean, technically they really didn't have a lot of money to work with, and they, of course, weren't able to get great players, but they were still able to get players in on the cheap, especially with D'Angelo Hall giving them the home team discount and him balling out of his mind regardless of the negative attention that he receives, because a lot of times people think he's getting beat. I don't even want to get into that monster right now, but D. Hall, in my opinion, has played about as well as any other DB in the league. I mean, the term shutdown corner, in my opinion, is overrated because there are probably only 2-3 in the league ever and during the time period.
Yeah.
After that, you got your good guys, you got your serviceable guys, and you got your guys who only are in the league because they run a 40 time a little bit faster than I do. So when you talk about DBs, you know, if you're in the top 15, top 16 DBs in the league, in my opinion, you're doing rather well, and I can easily say with confidence that D'Angelo Hall is one of the top. Well, sorry, my fault. There's 64 starting DBs in the league. If he's in the top 32 and he's there easily, in my opinion, then you're doing well. So he's doing well. It just happens to be that, of course, a lot of times when you hear about this guy getting beat, and it doesn't happen often because he shut down Megatron this year. He's been giving Dez Bryant fits ever since he's been in the league. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of times you hear about this guy getting beat on plays, but he plays the top guys rather well. So, you know, it is what it is. I just want to see what they're willing and capable of doing this upcoming season with a little bit more money, well, a lot more money, but less draft picks. Mm-hmm. You know, I just want to see how they address these holes they got to fill, because they got a lot of holes they need to fill, both on the offensive and defensive side of the ball, with that entire O-line just about needing an overhaul. And you have 8 players that are free agents or retiring on that defense.
Right, right, right. So one last question for you, and I'll let you go watch the epic GoDaddy.com bowl. who would you like to see, realistically, you'd like to see coach your Washington Redskins next year?
Realistically, out of the guys that they've talked about potentially, what? I really don't know. The only ones that I can say is the only guy I hope they don't bring in, truthfully, is Jim Caldwell.
Mm.
Because of what he's done in Baltimore as an O coordinator. I mean, yeah, he had that stretch toward the end of the season, but their offense didn't look too hot. Maybe it's because of the play calling. maybe because of the personnel this past year. But also, you know, you don't have Peyton Manning in Indianapolis. How great is Jim Caldwell?
Right.
But, you know, I don't know who I can say would be great to come into the situation. I would lean more heavily upon a guy who has some NFL experience. I don't know about these hotshot college coaches or guys who have been coordinators for 1 or 2 years. But this next hire needs to be cognizant of the owner, needs to be cognizant of the fan base in the media in this area and how much scrutiny he may have to face. And also has to be cognizant of that franchise quarterback or having an understanding of if he is the franchise quarterback or if he's not, what direction do you head into from here on out and how to protect him and what they're going to do on the defensive side of the ball. And with that being said, you know, they've interviewed, who is that, Bisacci, the Giants special teams coordinator. Maybe they need to bring him in as special teams coordinator for the Skins because their special teams was horrible. McDermott. it was special. It was like short bus special. But Sean McDermott is another guy they talked about. Daryl Bevel, Perry Farrell, Fewell, whatever, the Giants defensive coordinator. I'm getting tired of Art Brown's name being tossed out there. He said on numerous occasions that he's not leaving Baylor, but yet I just heard Jason Lockenfor say earlier today that he's still a candidate. Which one is it?
I'll say this for Rockwell. I'm sorry to cut you off, but if they bring Art Briles in, if they bring him in, don't you think the pressure on RG3 and the perception that he would be RG3's guy in a sense to be a puppet for him? Because he coached him in college, wouldn't that kind of like pretty much intensify and verify the rumors that what his daddy said behind the scenes, one Art Briles a coaching team, and that the Griffin family is running the Redskins? And that
I would completely agree. I would completely agree, and I completely forgot to get on that situation there, the whole relationship of the Griffins and the organization as a whole, and I'm going to keep this as quickly as possible so I can get back to answering your question. But, you know, I just heard mixed reaction in terms of Robert Griffin II coming, especially in that situation after that Niners game, coming back to the locker room after that game. Now, I've heard, you know, it's kind of weird for a family member to come into the locker room post-game, but I've also heard, you know what, it's kind of not looked upon as being weird when a family member believes that their child is injured. And RG3 was getting beat up a little bit during that game. So depending upon how you want to look at the situation, I've heard it said both ways that, you know, it was weird or it wasn't weird. You know, it's just about the player that's in the locker room and their perception of the situation. But, yes, it would be rather weird or rather damning to the case that, you know, the Griffins have no say-so in what's going on with the organization, but they bring in his collegiate coach. It would not only discredit everything that Griffin II has been saying, but it also discredits the leadership within the organization and potentially how the players on that team perceive how the team has been being run, where it seems as though everything is being catered towards the quarterback. Now, I've heard ex-players say everybody knows that the quarterback gets special treatment, but when it goes to that point, it causes some rift within the organization.
But
to answer your original question, names who I haven't heard thrown out there, who I think will be interesting to hear potentially thrown out there, and I think, kind of fits that criteria in terms of guys who have an understanding of what the leadership here does and how to handle the fan base. One guy that jumps to my mind will probably be Greg Williams, but the only hot thing about him is, of course, Bounty Gate. And then, of course, you have the combination of Bounty Gate and RG3 media swirls going on around here in the city, it could just be a huge distraction. But, you know, I digress. I still believe that he probably would be a good guy to bring in here, but I doubt if they look at him. Mike Shula is another guy who I think would probably be interesting. Jake Gruden may have been interesting up until watching him and what he did with the Bengals today against the Chargers.
Yeah,
well, because of that, I'm hoping he's off the market now because of the way he coached his game today. But,
right.
Like I said, Ken Whitzenhunt may be another guy, but I think the Detroit job is his to lose. You hear fans throwing out Russ Grimm's name, but I don't think that Russ Grimm will be a good fit for this team because of the fact that, for whatever reason, he's interviewed for several jobs over the past 5 years, but he has never been able to get a head coaching job. So it's something about Russ Grimm, be it however he interviews or however he, whatever it is he's telling the coaches in terms of how he wants to run the team, that he's just not NFL head coach material as of right now. But whoever it is they bring in, he needs to be a strong guy, mentally strong, and be able to control what's going on between owner and team. But team and quarterback and have those situations down to a point where they can continue, where they can go ahead and focus off of a lot of this nonsense which has been going on.
Right. All right, my brother. Well, I'm gonna pray for y'all.
The rest of the fan base.
Yeah, I'm gonna do a prayer dance for the fan base. Maybe call a few chicken heads, but it's gonna get better, dude. But we'll see. Hey, man, thanks a lot for tuning in and for chiming in, rather, and we'll be talking soon.
Oh, of course. Thanks for having me, and I'm just a little upset I didn't have more time because it's a whole lot more to this mess. What's going on, and I'm just glad that it's finally over.
All right, my brother. Take care.
All right, you do the same, man. Happy New Year.
All right. Yeah, you too. Peace out.
All right, thanks.
Peace. That's my guy, Dwayne Nash, big Redskins fan. And it's a hot mess here in Washington. Like I said in the previous podcast, I live in the D.C. area, of Virginia specifically. And, it's I don't know who's going to coach this team. I don't know who wants to coach this team, but it can only get worse before it gets better, so Redskins fans, hang in there. But anyway, hope you all enjoyed the show today, tonight rather. And, we'll talk more about teams that didn't make the playoffs, get their fans' reaction to them, and all that. But once again, this is Scott Burks. Thank you for tuning in to the Clown 06. I'm out.